I'm almost 17 years into this, and my confidence is still growing. Not that I'm not confident, but it's like, as the years go by, I get more and more confident. That means that I haven't hit a ceiling, and I haven't stopped learning. When I got my face tattoos, it was a way of showing my commitment to my craft and to never working for somebody again. Even if I give you $100, even if I give you $1,000.
Yeah, true.
It's not gonna change your life, but these words might.
It is, it's the, again, that personal part. Like, when you feel the love, it's that's gonna carry you further than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to another episode of the Chats with Clark podcast. I'm your host, Joe Clark, and here at Chats with Clark, we don't do poppy intros. We get straight to the point. And the point of today's episode, episode 84, is Mike Miller, the celebrated artist whose work has been collected by professional athletes and stars like Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier, MGK, and displayed in the Museum of Contemporary Art in apartment complexes throughout the city and beyond, especially as it stems into tattoo art, which enabled him to open up Greenlight Tattoos and Art Gallery, named the best tattoo shop of Cleveland in 2023, where we are now amidst Mike's creations. Mike Miller, thank you for having us and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's a privilege. I'm really excited. I've heard so many great things about you, Mike, and I'm excited to dive into it with you.
Me as well.
To get it rolling right off the rip, my first question for you, Mike, is what is the best thing that there is to know about you?
Wow. The best thing there is to know about me. I've never been asked a question like that. It's tough because I guess I got to toot my own horn a little bit. But I think I'll go with something that not a lot of people know about me.
Okay.
I'm kind of a nerd for real. Like, I love to learn. So I'm a history buff. I read. I've been falling off lately, but I usually read a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just love to learn, man. And I'm a very curious guy. You know, I think that's the most interesting thing about me. I don't know if that's the best thing, though. I don't know. That's a tough question, Joe.
It is, Mike.
That's crazy.
But that curiosity and that zeal for knowledge is going to allow you to just keep growing in every facet of your life.
Absolutely.
I mean, I would imagine in outside of just art, but of course, within the realm that you work, like you would put that attribute into play.
For sure.
So, I mean, you get into a relationship, you want to know about the person, you get into a business, you want to know about the business. That's going to carry you forever.
And every facet. I think that's the key to it, like growth. You know, that's that growth mindset. And I mean, it comes from being curious and wanting to learn. Like, instead of thinking you know it all already, then there's nothing to learn. There's no room to grow.
Yeah, great humility piece of that. I wouldn't have thought of that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. What about does it make you competitive too? Do you feel like
I'm extremely competitive. But I think I get that from my brother or just growing up with him. He's been competitive. It's only me and him. He played sports though his whole life. I didn't, but I got that competitive edge just, you know, competing with him in other ways, even with art. Like, we grew up drawing together. And I always kind of looked up to him and thought, like, he was better than me or compare my art to his. So I was always trying to outdo him. And I still, you know, still there a little bit.
Of course.
Yeah. But it's friendly now, you know what I mean? I want him to do well, but yeah, it pushes me. I'll say that.
It does. When you have two people going for something, to be doing it neck and neck is powerful.
Absolutely.
I think when you're growing up too, it ends up giving you some thick skin.
It does.
Right? Like, you know that sometimes, I'm sure his art was better, or sometimes in the competition he did do better. And it's like, all right, now I got to ante up again and get ready to go.
Exactly.
No. Yeah. That's so formative.
Yeah.
I wanted to fast forward a little bit here, Mike.
Okay.
You're at the University of Cincinnati, 2008. Yeah. I read this story that you were mailed from someone out of state $35.
Oh, wow.
Is this correct?
To
design a tattoo, right?
Yeah.
This is amazing. Tell me a little bit about this story.
That's crazy. You did some research.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready to go.
Okay. that was my first time getting paid for some art. I was 19, my second year out there. And I would post my sketches on Facebook. And this was a guy I went to high school with, so he knew I was drawing all through school.
Yeah.
And he wanted a tattoo, but he wanted me to design it and asked how much for me to draw it. I didn't know, you know, because I never sold art. It was $30.
It was $30, okay.
And yeah, there was no Cash App, Apple Pay, Zelle, none of that at the time. You know, we talking 17 years ago. And yeah, he mailed me $30. And I mailed him the picture, or maybe I sent him a picture of it. But he mailed me the money. He mailed me the cash.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So you didn't actually do the tattoo. You just did the design.
I just designed it, yeah.
And were you tattooing at all at that point?
No.
Okay.
No, but the wheels got to turning at that point. And I was, after that, I started designing more tattoos for people in college. And the guy that was doing the tattoos out there, he was like a local artist, tattooing out his house, I think. His name was Red. And he wasn't doing my drawings justice. I didn't like how the tattoos were coming out. So that's really when the wheels got turned. I'm like, I think I could do this better than him, at least. And let me at least try my hand at it. But it took another 2 years after that for me to actually go for it.
So you're designing them, you're putting them out there, and then you're realizing, you're like, there's some friction here. I know I can really capitalize on this. Yeah. When did you decide, all right, I'm going for it? Like, what was the tipping point where you said, all right, let me just try this on my own?
I dropped out of school, so I didn't know where to go from there. Like, I had no direction. It was like, I got to try something. And that was the thing. I tried to get into DAP out there at UC. I applied twice, but my GPA wasn't high enough. And I knew if that wasn't it, I'm like, I'm cool. Like, if it's not art, I don't want to do it. I finally decided what I wanted to do, but I went in there undecided the first 2 years. And then when I couldn't do what I wanted to do there, I'm like, I gotta try something else. So I had nothing to lose, I felt like.
How do you even practice tattooing? How does that even start?
Well, now they got like fake skin you could practice on.
Okay.
But at that time, I tattooed on my real skin, like on my legs.
Wow.
Yeah. And some willing friends that were willing to be my guinea pigs that knew I could draw. And I was doing it for free. So it was like, I'll sacrifice a little piece of skin for you. And that they did.
Isn't that wild? I mean, there's the permanence of it really is fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. I think about the tattoo world. Mm-hmm. Later on, I'm curious to hear more, like as we go through your story about that. But in the immediate, when you're doing just kind of the trial runs, I'm sure you're seeing yourself getting better. How do you go into a shop and say, hey, like, let me work here?
So luckily, I knew the owner of the shop that I started at.
Okay.
Jimmy Hayden. He still owns Focused.
Awesome.
And if it wasn't for what him and his brother did, there wouldn't be any of this. And not just for me, but I think, honestly, all Black-owned tattoo shops, they paved the way for us. Like, prior to them, there were none, and they were getting a lot of doors shut in their face when they were starting off. So, shout out to them. But Jim, he knew me because I was getting tattooed by him since I was 16. Mm. So, I knew him for, like, 5 years, and it's funny the way he hired me. Like, I showed him my drawings. He was like, yeah, the drawings are cool. He's like, you dress cool? That was one of the things he liked about me.
Okay.
The way I dressed. And he knew me a little bit. So he's like, yeah, come on. You know, you need this equipment. It's this much for the apprenticeship. You know, come on.
So he taught you. It was apprenticeship.
It was an apprenticeship.
Yeah.
Honestly, even though he gave me the platform, I wouldn't say he taught me much, but he put me in the right place.
Okay.
To learn from the guys around me. But as soon as I got on, he opened up another shop. They started a franchise. And he opened up a shop in Cleveland Heights. And he wasn't at the shop that I was at much. So I was learning from the guys around me. And I mean, it worked out perfectly. At the time, I was kind of like, damn, I paid you to teach me. So I was a little bitter about it. But it worked out. Like, I mean, I wouldn't change a thing.
I feel like it's part of leading a team too, is he knew that the guys around him and women, you know, the people around him would do you justice too, and would bring you to where you needed to be.
Yep, they did.
I'm sure that's how I feel. Like, any leader who believes in what they have would say that about their team.
Yep.
So
he knew I was so young. I didn't know what he was doing, but I get it now.
How long were you in the shops before you decided to open up here at Greenlight?
Yeah. So I was at Focus for about 3 years, maybe four. Then I went home and I started tattooing at home.
Okay.
For 5 years.
Wow.
5 years I was tattooing at home, me and my brother. And that was really when I knew, like, we could do our own thing because there are no walk-ins. Ain't nobody walking up to your house knocking on the door for a tap. So it was all appointments. And I knew I was busy all the time. So I'm like, okay, I have a solid clientele. I could, you know, I could do this. And I was urging him to do it, like, for us to do it together. He wasn't ready. So we jumped into another shop. We went to Impact Inc. for about 3 years. And it was there that we decided, like, yo, it's time.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it happened when it did, because we wouldn't have been in this space if we tried to do it back when I wanted to do it initially.
Wow. Yeah, the divine timing in a way. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Was your brother learning, what's your brother's name? Remind me.
Marcus.
Yep. Was Marcus learning outside mostly of you too? And then you guys were collaborating at the end, or were you both working at like Focus together?
So there were, by the time he graduated from college and came back home, I brought him the machine while he was in college. Like, yo, you need to try this.
Yeah.
About 6 months into my career, I was like, I think you'd be great at this, because I knew he was a great artist. And then by the time he graduated school, they opened another Focus, the third Focus. And I was trying to get him into mine, the one I was at, but it was like, we need artists over here. So he was at Focus, but at a different location.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, because it's amazing to me that you both kind of ended up on the same path, right? Like all that growing up, the painting and competing, then you ended up at the same spot.
Yeah.
And then it makes sense then that you, of course, brought your ties together
for
and
sure.
opened up here. Sure. So it was August of 22. You guys cut the ribbon here.
Yes.
And you said that it was the perfect timing. What made it perfect that allowed you to grow what you have here?
Man, the only reason I say it's perfect is because if it was earlier, we wouldn't have had this space. I don't think, you know, there was something else here maybe less than a year before we got it. And then if it was later, we might have missed the opportunity to get this space. So it all has to do with the location. Like, that's why I say the timing was perfect, because this location, I mean, I can't imagine anything better than this. It's kind of made it so easy. It just made the process so easy. You know, obviously we had to build it out and put our touch on it. But yeah, a lot of it has to do with just the space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is primo. You're right downtown. You're in an area that's bumping and moving. It has a lot of people coming in and out of it, which is, of course, helpful. What have you noticed, Mike, has been the biggest advocate for your work? Have you been putting stuff out there forever and that was it? Or is it a lot of word of mouth? What was working for you?
In the beginning, word of mouth, because it was before social media was really big. Like, Facebook was the only thing. And me hitting, like, going out there, passing out cards and meeting people too. But now I think social media is a big help.
Yeah.
I've been able to attract a lot of business just from what I post, but you definitely have to do the work. If you don't do the work, you got nothing to share. So that's first, always.
Yeah. You're perfecting the craft.
Absolutely.
One of the things I think is interesting about here is that you made the decision to bring your artwork and your painting into it too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's distinct, because so often you go into tattoo shops and it's almost like pictures of what they would put on you.
Mm-hmm.
But here it's a lot of art that you all have done.
Mm-hmm.
How did you make the decision to not separate the two, but make them one?
I was kind of in the transition of like painting only when we started this. That was my goal, was like to kind of put the machine down for real and just paint only. So that was a big part of my focus. It's something that I wanted to do for sure. And then, I mean, we got so much wall space.
Okay.
Like, if it was empty, it would look crazy. So what better to put on these walls than some art?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
For our audience here, if you haven't been in Greenlight, the ceilings are very high, and you'll see some of that. We'll leave you in the overlay here, but a lot of window, a lot of space, a lot of wall to fill here in Greenlight.
Yep. Yeah. So we're actually going to fill this wall up you know, corner to corner to the ceiling, like from the top, top of the couch all the way to the ceiling real soon. So this is going to be covered with art.
Amazing. Yeah.
It's we incredible. Haven't done that yet.
How have you seen that your work and painting has crossed over into tattooing? Are they similar? What have one taught you about the other? Are they different?
Yeah, they're similar. A lot of people, when they saw my style in painting, it drew them to, you know, me as a tattooer. Like, I want you to put some of that on me. So sometimes I'm able to do like whatever I want. I got a client literally that comes in almost weekly, books me for an hour at a time. Almost got him covered at this point, but he lets me draw whatever I want on him. He doesn't even look at the drawing. He doesn't look at anything until the tattoo is done every time.
So, that's so cool.
Yeah. So yeah. I get people like that. But also it's taught me like my technical abilities have improved too. Like I've learned like, or I'd say my artistry has improved, not my technique, because tattooing and painting are so different. But as far as my artistry goes, like, it's made me a better artist painting. So I brought that over into the tattoos, and I feel like my tattoos are just getting better and better. I'm almost 17 years into this, and my confidence is still growing. Not that I'm not confident, but it's like, as the years go by, I get more and more confident. That means that I haven't hit a ceiling, and I haven't stopped learning.
I was just thinking that. You know what it goes I mean? Right back to that first line, right? Mm-hmm. Continually learning and recognizing that there are areas for growth. Even if it's you're putting out a top-tier product, which you are, you can still just keep going more and more and more. Yeah. I mean, that perfection strive is motivating for all of us.
Okay.
I think an interesting distinction, Mike, is that you tattoo in black and white, mm-hmm. but then all of your paintings are so colorful.
Yeah. So because most of my clients, you know, starting out at least, we're like darker pigment. You can't use the color palette that I use on my canvases on you know, our skin. Mm-hmm. You can, but it's not gonna show up as well as black and gray. So I started that way. Not that I'm opposed to doing color. I like doing color, but it's also like messier, more tedious. And then when I get to paint on canvas, I get to do whatever I want. I think it's just like a break from, not that black and gray isn't fun in tattoos, but it's a break from that mundane, palette.
Totally. You have so many more options, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And when you're doing something all the time, it's like, it's nice to break off from it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike, I think that in that vein, right, like we're talking about the intentionality behind all the decisions with the art, that there's a derivation of something, that it's derived from some part of your life. Like art stems from something. I think all of us have that, right? When you're a kid and you're drawing something, so maybe it's your dream, maybe it's what you saw and you're remembering, or maybe it's like, oh, I'm just envisioning I want to do this someday, and you draw it or paint it or whatever. Where do you think that your art stems from?
That's tough, because honestly, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know. Like, if I was to just create without thinking, I don't know where that comes from. I really don't. I mean, you could say some higher source, or like the soul, or if you want to get deep about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I really don't know where it comes from. Like something within, you know, to be honest.
Interesting. So if you just sit down, it's whatever the subconscious mind kind of brings out. That's fascinating. Okay, so you would almost disagree completely with that thought that it is derived from something.
I wouldn't disagree. I think some people, some people it is. But for me, like, I don't know, man. I try to think almost beyond this world. So that, and you have to use your imagination to do that. And that, you don't, your imagination is just creation. That's not from something you've experienced for real. You know?
That is a sheer talent, I think, Mike. Because I'm thinking that if I were asked to create something, my thoughts would go towards whatever I had been experiencing or wanted to, again, some sort of experience that I'd be grappling with.
Yeah. Now, sometimes that happens. It's not all the time that I'm just like coming out of nowhere with it. Sometimes I have a message that I'm trying to get across. Mm-hmm. But even still, like the way that I create it, it's not like it's something I've seen before. It's like, it's still coming from, you know, within the mind's eye. That's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting to hear you say you think of trying to think about it otherworldly or out of this world, because of all the people that are our mutual connections, everyone describes you as philosophical, or someone who's like deeply philosophical. Where does that come from, like, for you?
I really don't know where that comes from, because my parents aren't that way. My brother isn't that way. Like, my immediate family, like, I don't know why me. I'm just that black swan, for real.
And how do you see that coming about in your life?
What do you mean? Like,
how does it manifest? How does your philosophical approach to life manifest in your life?
Like, are you saying, like, what does it do for me? Mm-hmm. I think it affects the way that I live and the way that I approach everything. Just my whole perspective on life. Yeah.
Yeah, what about the perspective? Do you think it's, what actions do you think you take because of that, that maybe someone who doesn't have that philosophical approach?
Okay.
Would.
I got you. Being philosophical, I guess. And this is what other people are labeling me. Okay.
True enough.
So I'll take it, and I get it, you know? But I think,
Do you think you are?
I definitely am.
Okay.
I am. But, I'll say this. It makes me look deeper into everything. That's the answer.
Yeah.
It makes me look deeper into every single thing.
There's always more than meets the eye.
Man, so can I give a quick example?
Please.
All right.
Yeah.
One day I was catching a lift to work because something was up with my car. I don't remember. And I rarely get to ride in a car. Usually you're driving, you got to focus on the road. Mm-hmm. So I'm in the back and I'm observing everything. And I look at the nails or screws in this bridge. And I'm like, damn, somebody had to think of all this. Somebody had to perfectly construct all this. I mean, everything. But I just remember specifically looking at the bolts in the bridge, like, where does this thought begin? I'm trying not to cuss, but I'm thinking, like, who the fuck? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, who thought of this?
For sure.
And how? So I think about everything like that. Like, where does it come from? The same question you asked me. And I don't think we really had an answer to that. But yeah, I look deeply into everything. Like, just because you know what something's called don't mean you know what it is or how it works or how it was made, you know?
That's really good.
It could be as simple as like the paper towels over there. Like, can you make paper towels?
Heck no, right.
You know, would you know where to begin?
Right.
And who thought of that? So yeah, I just look deeply into everything. That's how it works.
I love that, Mike, because it shows how intertwined we all are too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when you start going down that rabbit hole of, man, all these bolts, well, that means someone had to put them in. And then even before that, someone had to ship them there. And before that, they had to be packaged and someone had to make them. Someone had to get the materials. I mean, you are just like, there's so many people involved in just putting those bolts into the bridge.
And then I take it all the way to the source. Like, somebody had to think of this thing.
Yeah.
First,
we need this object that's going to adhere another object and keep them together.
It starts here, everything.
Yeah. All right, that's really good. I'm gonna be pondering on that too. I tend to look at things like that as well. It's like when you're fascinated by some idea, how did someone think of this thing?
Everything, bro.
You're everything. Right with architecture too. I mean, I think about when there's nothing, there's just like a land, there's just land.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And there's no reference point. And then they come and they put this big building in there. I'm like, how did you know that the first part started here?
Exactly.
And then you built the whole building around. I know there's all the measurements. I mean, I got that, but I don't, again, it's still.
It's tough to wrap your mind around. Sometimes I'll think like, I wonder what this exact spot looked like 1,000 years ago. 100 years ago. 1,000,000 years ago.
And then you go forward with it too. It's like, all right, when I'm done here, what's going to happen here?
You know what I mean?
It's deep, Mike. I mean, you're philosophical. You got it going on. I think part of that too is a little bit of what we touched about on the strive for perfection too. Because when you look at something whole picture, you want it to just be great, right? Mm-hmm. You want to understand all of the history of it and understand that greatly. And going forward, you want it to be great. And you want to contribute your part in a great way.
Yes.
As a tattoo artist, something that is inherent is that you get one chance at it. How do you prepare yourself, Mike, to just focus in so that you can be so intentional that you make the most of that one chance?
I think now it's like second nature, because I've been doing it for so long. But in the beginning, I remember getting nervous a lot. And some of my contemporaries at the time, you know, taught me breathing techniques to calm myself down. And mainly that, like, you gotta be calm. You know, you can't be nervous. And now my confidence in myself and my capabilities is so high, it's like breathing. So I don't really have to do much. I'm just ready now.
Yeah, it's so well rehearsed.
Yeah.
That is true. You have to be, I would imagine the stillness is very important to your calm notion. Mm-hmm. You can't be shaking.
And I remember times in the past, like, you know, early on, being a little shaky, being nervous and fighting to overcome that while I'm doing the tattoo. It's nerve-wracking.
And then, Mike, do you see that that carries over into other areas of your life? You're like, I got one shot of this.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't know. I think I give everything my all anyways. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give everything all I got.
Do you think this has made you calmer? Because you're very calm in general. You're striking me as very calm.
Sometimes. Okay. Sometimes.
We all get worked up, right?
Yeah. I think I'm probably just tired, man. That's probably why I'm coming off so calm. I do a lot between tattooing, painting, parenting. I'm in the gym all the time. Like I gotta prioritize my rest a little better.
It's the challenge for all people who are aspiring.
Right? For sure. You could probably relate.
Yeah, I get it. It's not something that I'm particularly great at doing either. I get it. Yeah, because you can always just do more.
That's how it feels. I know.
Just dig deep and just do it, right?
I know.
Yeah, it's when you're going through something that's so particular to just become really good at it, I feel like would, and it probably does even like subliminally translate over into the other areas of your life, that when you're in the gym, you're doing your rap and you're, again, giving it your all, but like striving for the perfect rap because you got one that, inherently you've got one chance at it.
True.
And when you're being a father, it's like I'm going to make the most of this. I'm going to make this right. I'm going to give it my best chance. True. Right? You got one chance in that moment at it. I don't know.
No, I guess that makes sense. Maybe subconsciously, I do think that way. And that's why I do give everything my all. Because technically, we're not promised the next second, so.
Yeah, true. Yeah. How does your belief in some sort of higher power influence the work that you're doing and the art that you're putting out there?
I think it just gives me, like, I derive my power from that source. You know, it gives me more confidence and strength and knowing, like, I'm connected to that thing.
Yeah.
And we all are. Whatever you want to call it, you know? Because I don't have a specific even name for it or belief, you know? I don't knock anybody's belief. I think, but I do think it's there, whatever that thing is.
Has it always been that way for you, Mike?
I was raised Baptist. But that was what was taught to me. That's not so. So I don't know what humans would gravitate towards if they weren't given something, right?
Okay.
If you don't, like, even my kids, I don't tell them, you know, what something is. You know, you figure it out. I'm curious to see what you come up with.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, I was born again in a sense when I was 25. And changed my perspective on everything. But we'd be here all day getting into that. I don't know. We ain't got to go that route right now. But
that's the first phrase that was coming to mind as you were describing the idea of not being taught anything or given a belief is the blank canvas.
Yes.
Right. It translates into you having a blank canvas and then putting your touches on it. And then it comes into the masterpiece that it is. Exactly. Well, for you, masterpiece. For me, God knows what's going on there. But
but you're creating too. You're creating right now. You know, with this.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we all do have that something in us that's creative.
Everybody. Seen?
Yes.
Everybody. Crushed. You know what I mean? Like, you're surrounded by it.
You know what's interesting, Mike, to that point? I think one of the biggest shifts in the world that we have now is that people are inherently consuming more than they're creating.
Yeah.
And it's not even close.
I know. Honestly, I struggle with consumption, with overconsumption.
Yeah.
I made a series about that. So like you said, where do I get some of my inspiration or ideas from? Sometimes it's real life things. And that was one thing that I was really struggling with and still do, like phone addiction. Mm-hmm. And it's not natural. We're not built for this.
No.
Currently, you know, we might adapt and develop our brains, you know, we'll get used to it. But right now we like the test dummies.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It is. I mean, we all know they're addicting. There's the way, for whatever it is reason, the way that literally just the screen is for us and the motions that we make with them are addicting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious how it's going to translate down the line, given that we've all been creating significantly less and consuming significantly more. Because I can't think of a time that it's been like that.
No, not in recorded history.
Mm-mm.
No. So maybe we'll see. Maybe it'll be further out than we want. You know, I don't know. But I don't like it.
Yeah.
I know that. Like, it's a fight for real to not consume so much. And it just, I know it doesn't feel good.
On the point of something feeling good too, and I'm picturing that the consumption comes in when you're kind of just trying to take a downtime, right? Like, it's like, I'm going to take some downtime. Then you pull out the phone.
And
in the world that you're in, I feel like it's so important to stay fresh because you do have that one shot and what you put on there is permanent.
Yeah.
What do you do then, Mike, to stay fresh, to stay vibrant, to feel like you're putting your best foot forward?
I think the gym helps a lot. Mm-hmm. Working out, staying active. Period, like in any way. And just prioritizing your health. So like I said, I don't do well with my rest. I'm working on that, but what I eat, the gym, and then trying to be still and sit in silence at times. Like you said, when I take those down times, sometimes I do whip out my phone and then it's technically not downtime, you know? So I'll have to put it in another room and maybe even set a timer where it's like, you can't touch it until that timer goes off.
That's a great idea, yeah. Mike. That's a great idea.
Yeah. I did it today to make sure I was so fresh for this.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I think we all find out what ends up working for us, but I don't, again, not to keep bringing up the phones thing, but I don't think that in the world that we have right now, you have constant hyperstimulation in your pocket at all times, that we get this real downtime.
No. Unless you put it away.
Yeah.
You gotta put it away. That's the only way.
You're very conscientious, Mike, and you're very aware. I'm curious, again, going off of, again, more people things, like everyone loves you. And I'm curious, yeah, you're welcome. One of the decisions you've made is you have tattoos on your face.
Yeah.
And I think that oftentimes that's viewed upon as intimidating or not, not as gentle as you are.
Mm-hmm.
How did that decision come into play, and how do you grapple with that?
So it was a gradual thing. Like I started, first I used to say I wouldn't get anything below my sleeve line. And then I went on the forearm. I'm like, all right, might as well hit the forearm. Then I said, I'll keep it under the collar. Then I did my neck. I'm like, well, I can't hide none of this anymore. When I got my face tattoos, it was a way of showing my commitment to my craft and to never working for somebody again. And this was 8-9 years into my career of tattooing. So it took a while,
yeah. You
know, but it was like, definitely not getting a job like this, and I won't need another job. I got it for the rest of my life.
Interesting. Yeah, you're betting on yourself.
Absolutely.
You know. How did you decide what got such high value real estate on your face?
Actually, I got some cover-ups on my face.
Really?
Yeah. Not because I didn't like what was there, but the concept, but how it looked, I didn't like. So there was like a lion under this phoenix. I didn't like how that looked. I got IDK under this Tetris block. I still want to get that again, but it was too bulky. I didn't like the lettering.
Okay.
But I live by that. You know, I don't know. I don't know much. I know that I don't know. You know, and that's what keeps me curious.
Yeah, constantly learning.
Absolutely. But I got this big, I don't like this that much. It's a dragon. That's my birth year of the dragon.
Okay.
But it's like a blob. It's not super defined. I need to get it touched up. But that was my first big face tattoo, and I didn't love it. I actually still don't.
Mike, how do you, because you're so good, but you can't tattoo yourself, how do you determine whose talents and whose abilities you believe in enough to let them tattoo you?
I mean, I see what they do. You know, I watch you a little bit and I could tell just from your work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I got my trusted go-to artist now.
I'm sure that that would become part of it.
Yeah.
Does Marcus tattoo you?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, I could see that being cool.
He does.
You guys tattoo each other.
And then I got a couple guys in here, but there's one guy or two guys outside of here that I go to. One I used to work with back at Focused. Mm-hmm. And then there's a guy, Pop, on the west side in Lorraine. Pop Cole. I like Pop a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's my guy.
Okay. So sorry, I kind of jumped around.
It's all good.
But yeah. Because it is totally a statement piece. Like you're a billboard. You're a billboard for what you, for you. You're a billboard for the brand that you're living out, like all of Greenlight, right? Like you're a billboard for it. And that is such, you dove in.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great testimony to being so steadfast in who you are.
Yeah.
And maybe not letting people tell you who you are.
Yeah. I definitely get judged for it though. You know, I get looks and questions and denied access to places.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Like no face tats. Straight up. In Houston, Vegas, Chicago, Kentucky, Columbus, plenty of places all around. Austin. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you grapple with that, Mike?
I just be like, you know what? I'd be like, if I was, the first time it happened, I was like, if I was Lil Wayne or Gucci or somebody, one of these rappers with Gucci with an ice cream cone tattooed on his face, you're not going to tell him no.
Yeah.
So what it made me do is like, all right, I got to go back to the drawing board and make myself more valuable. Because you won't tell a certain person no, no matter what.
Hmm. Hey, you just posted Wayne today on your story.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was my favorite rapper.
That is always so good. Was?
He was.
Who he took was. The cake now?
I got to put Jay up top, Jay-Z. Okay. Yeah, but yeah, Wayne, he fell off after like 09 to me.
Last little bit has kind of been, yeah, you kind of wonder maybe you should have hung him up. But
how old are you, Joe?
27.
Okay, you missed the golden age. You missed it, man.
Hey, you know what's so cool is that we can, one of the best things is just fire
you,
it up.
You can know? Still listen to it, yeah. but unless you got somebody putting you on, you'll never know.
What was the golden age?
02 to 07. 2002 okay. to 2007.
When was Drop the World and all that?
That was like 2010-ish, maybe, okay. 11, something like that.
Really?
Even though I liked Drop the World.
Yeah.
It got spotty around that time, like his music. Okay. To me, it was like, I like some of it, I don't like some of it. 02 to 07, he could do no wrong.
It's amazing. Yeah, people in my have eyes. High regard for him, too.
Oh, yeah, he's still one of yeah. the greatest.
100%.
Yeah.
To your point, I think it goes back to your ability to reflect, right? And there's a certain humility to say when someone denies you, well, okay, well, again, if Gucci or Wayne or any of those sorts of people were here, you would have let them in or wouldn't have checked a card or whatever the case may be. You just would have been walk on in. You know, I always feel that way at hotels, right? They're like, oh, we're sold out. I'm like, really? Well, if Michael Jordan walks in, you're not getting him a room? Come on.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. Yeah.
There's certain people they won't say no to.
So what do you do then to aspire to be someone who doesn't get a no? In general, what does that look like?
What does it look like? It looks like, to me, even though, like, I don't create for monetary gain, but this is how I make a living. But if I thought about money when I was painting, it would interfere with the process. But to me, It's having that money where it's like, even if you don't know who I am, there's a price. If I say I got, not that I would do it even if I had it, but maybe just to see. Be like, yeah, I got 1,000, let me in. Oh, all right. Nah, I'm cool. You know?
Yeah, right.
Just to see. So it's either money or status or both. You know?
Yeah, one there is two. Always a price, yeah.
But it's usually always a price. But I would, I guess I want both. I want both. And I want it for freedom. I don't like limits. I don't like feeling limited. Mm-hmm. So I want to be able to do anything at any time with anyone, anywhere. So it's about freedom for me.
No boss.
No, and I haven't had a boss. But literally being able to do whatever, whenever, however, not like I wish I could, or even if small as getting into some of those places.
Yeah.
You know, there's a wall I can't get past.
Does it ever make you question it?
Question what? My ability to do so?
No, just the path. If you're like, when someone tells you no, sometimes I think we go, oh, maybe am I doing the wrong thing? Am I the wrong path?
No, it's fuel.
Okay. Yeah. You're the opposite with it.
It's fuel.
Cause so often
you don't know who I am yet. You know,
I love it.
Cause I know who I am inside. It's inside, mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, you just don't know yet.
Mm, I love it.
Yet.
Yeah, it fires you up. You're like, you know.
But you don't know. You will.
No one has to come on the show, right? I'm always grateful for anyone that wants to chat when they're open to it and excited. I'm like, I appreciate that. And I love when you get like a snarky remark or whatever, and it's like, okay, it's fine. By all means. But then when the time comes, you will, right? Yes. Like you will.
So you feel that same way.
Oh, absolutely.
You believe in what you're doing. You believe in who you are.
100%.
That's what it comes down to.
I think a lot of times people get a closed door though, and instead of knocking or instead of just barging through it or whatever, they're like, oh man, I gotta go find another door. You know?
It happens.
Yeah.
It happens, but yeah, no, I'm like, everybody has something that no one else has. I got something that you don't have. You got something that he doesn't have. And once you find that thing and really tap into it and use it to your best ability, don't play with your potential. There's only one, you know?
Yeah, the way that Mike does it, the way that Joe does it, whatever the case may be.
And it's special because of that.
100%.
Yeah.
What would you say that is for you?
I mean, definitely my way of creating, like that's the obvious thing.
Yeah.
But my way of thinking. And I think that's kind of, honestly, it should be the same answer for everybody if you think for yourself. But if you get too influenced by other things outside and become a clone or a sheep or a follower or whatever, then your answer might be different.
Totally
but,
true.
But inherently, you're a unique individual. You're the only one.
Yeah, you would think it would be the approach and the mindsets you embody that are so, if they're authentic to you, that's what drives you and that's what people can derive. Like that's like the show is built on, I want to hear other people's mindsets. Like what is your mindset about X, Y, and Z? Tell me it all.
Yes, yes. So that's what separates us all is the way our perspective and, you know, our mindsets. Like we don't even see things the same. Mm-hmm. We assume we do. I assume that if we look straight, we're seeing the exact same thing, the exact same way. But I don't know that.
Yeah.
I can't see through your eyes. So,
yeah. That's a great point. It's one of those situations for me, exactly what you're talking about, that's like the bolt on the bridge. Because, so like my uncle has some color blindness with different, it's like the blues and gray. And I'm like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, am I colorblind? You wonder, right? It like begs the question of like, well, I don't know how he sees it or what.
Exactly.
What blue looks gray or whatever different. For him, and I remember thinking about that one day and just being like, it's that whole idea of walking in someone else's shoes. Cause it's like, if that is so fundamental to how someone sees, maybe that's not actually colorblind, the other's colorblind, right? Like maybe if I'm not colorblind, I actually am colorblind and not the opposite.
Exactly.
You know?
So you kind of philosophical too.
You got to think about it. Yeah.
You think deeply. I think that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah. Yeah. There's not a lot of absolutes, I think. No. You end up finding, right? You know, there's not a lot of absolutes.
No. The more you learn, the more you realize you don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things that I think is so important in all of our lives, too, is to take influences from others. And we talked about your apprenticeship of sorts, even though it wasn't the direct influence, it was all the people around him. Who outside of that do you think has influenced your life, and how have you seen it to be so?
My life, not just my artistry, my life.
Yeah, because I think that's what's going to affect your mindset and your approach, which we've just concluded is kind of the superpower that we all have.
Yes. Excuse me. I think... Actually, the guys that I started working with at Focus, excuse me, I was 21 when I started tattooing. These guys were all 10 plus years my senior, like 32 might have been the next youngest. So they were all like uncles to me. And I learned more from them in that time period at Focus than I learned from a lot of men in my life. You know, my pops was there, but he would give me like quick lessons. You know, he'd say the cliche stuff, but not really break it down.
Okay.
So I got to see these guys and they were just really good examples. I think they kind of shaped me in a very formative and transformative part of my life.
Wow.
So I learned a lot from them. Was about five or six guys there. And then there's like big personalities that I take a little bit from. I like great orators, people that can move people just with their words. Sometimes it might not even be words that I agree with, but just that gift of speech. So a lot of great speakers inspire me. I don't want to say any names because they could actually be kind of controversial.
Sure.
You know, but I like guys that tell it like it is. And you know, just focused on the truth. And I got some people.
Yeah.
I got some people.
It's a gift, and again, not even going with names, it's a gift to be able to evoke emotions and cause something to happen just with your words. There's such intention in there, and there's such power with that comes with it.
Yes, I love it.
It is fascinating. I'm with you too. The UFC announcer Bruce Buffer, I'm like, how does this dude? Where does that come from?
So, his brother is Bruce the older one, the one that's been doing it forever.
Yeah.
Okay, because then he got a brother too that does it. Michael Buffer is the older one.
Michael's older? Okay.
He getting old. Like, it's starting to show.
Okay.
He's not able to do it like he used to. But Bruce, I know who. I met Bruce at the gym in L.A.
Wow.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I met Bruce Buffer.
Did you talk to him?
Briefly. I'm like, Bruce Buffer, right? He was like, yeah, I just introduced myself. That was it. I didn't want to interrupt his workout and start a full-blown conversation, but he was cool.
What was his normal voice like?
It was normal. It was like a regular guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that, again, gift.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that the introductions he gives to these people, I want to walk in every day like that. Walk in like, oh, like, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. you're leaving me with so many different thoughts, Mike, that I'm going to be thinking about deeply throughout this. And hopefully the same for you. It's a big reflection piece. Within that realm of people who are instrumental in your life, first of all, great compliments to the gentleman that you got to work with and who left their mark on you in that transformative way.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, you've been able to experience people all the time in your art world and the tattooing. Who would you say have been some of your favorite collaborations and why? Like, what is it that you've taken from them?
Mm. In the art world, honestly, I don't collab as much as I probably would. It's tough to collab with people, man, to get on the same page for artists especially. If you're talking about collabing with other artists, or are you talking about like how we're collabing right now?
Yeah, either way.
Okay. I mean, for one, I could say I love the questions that you're asking. So this experience has been great.
Thank you.
Like they're different. It's not the same old stuff because I'm not giving the same old answer. Mm-hmm. So you're good at what you do.
Thank you.
But I think working with my brother has probably been like some of my most memorable moments and best experiences of collaborating with somebody in my career. Scene actually caught us a couple of times doing it, not only at the house, but we did some stuff the year the Cavs won. Mm. We painted outside the Q at the time. It was the Q. And I was paying LeBron, he was paying Kyrie, my brother was.
That's so sick.
And fucking ESPN came and recorded us. NBA TV came over there and Scene caught it all. Just doing fun stuff like that with my brother, that's...
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Those are core memories right there.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, that's, first of all, the championship core memory, and then doing it with your brother, you're outside painting that.
Mm-hmm.
Man. Man, that's special. That sibling relationship is, it's the longest relationship we have in theory, which is, again, a wild thought to think about.
Yeah.
And to walk hand in hand with him each day and be doing those special opportunities is just so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fortunate, man.
100%. That's what's cool about collaborating, and I think, or even from the art perspective, I could see that being difficult because you have a vision, you're working on putting it out there, and then of course someone else comes in and is like, I don't know, that's kind of different than what I was thinking about.
Exactly, bro. It's tough. I think the only way I could do it is if I paint like half a canvas and then I just give it, like, here, you take it and do the other half, do whatever you want.
That'd be sweet though. Like, do that and have like a, like, imagine if you were agreed to paint on whatever the topic is, mm-hmm. and you painted a half and then someone else painted a half. Mm-hmm. Or even did it separately. Wait a minute. Like, put it down separately and put the two canvases together after the fact. Because I feel like if you saw, again, to your point of earlier, like, if you saw it already, then you'd have that influence inherently. It'd be kind of cool. Take the two separate, put them together. And then,
might have to do
that. Mark is that.
Absolutely.
That's good. Here's this one for you. Ready for this one?
Okay.
Mike, when the time comes that it is only your artwork that remains, what do you hope is the story that is told about you?
I like that. I just hope that it's accurate. I hope that it's accurate. I hope that it's true. The stories that you hear about me now, the stuff that the people, our mutual friends, have told you, those kind of things. I just hope that it's accurate. You know, I want, because somebody else is going to be telling the story.
Yeah, right.
So I just hope that it's on point. I can't decide for other people, you know, how they view me. I hope that people view me as like a giving person, a helpful person, an asset in many ways. But yeah, definitely a very deep thinking man, a good man, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All those mutuals, like I said, that is how they describe you. So
I'm on the right track then.
That's it.
But I also don't want to live like thinking about what other people think, mm-hmm. right? You got to be authentic. You just be who you are.
That's how I think the story is told accurately, right? If you are who you are, then the people that you end up close to end up seeing the most of who you are authentically, mm-hmm. and will be telling that tale in a way that is accurate and on point.
Yeah.
On a little bit of a different perspective, but in that same realm of conversating with some version of yourself, if you were to look back to younger you that's been painting forever, as long as you can remember, mm-hmm. maybe let's say 5-year-old you,
okay.
what would you tell that Mike about knowing that what you know now?
I would have taken my art more seriously way earlier. It took me till I was 21. I would have locked in on it from the beginning, 5 years old and on. And I would be a lot further ahead in my career if I did so, for sure. So yeah, I would have been like, you can make a living off this, a handsome living, because I was told otherwise growing up. So yeah, I would have said, no, they're wrong. You can do it. Focus on that and do that right now. And give it all you got. That's why I tell my daughter, she wants to be an artist, she says. She's 9 years old. She's been saying it since she was five or six. So I tell her, like, you can, but now, because I got the experience, what it takes, I can tell her what it takes too. So she's drawing every day.
I love that it's all rooted in that hard work and that belief in yourself. You got to have both. And I think they build off each other. You keep working hard, you see the growth, and the belief in yourself goes up. And then you believe in yourself. And then on the days when it's not seeming like the results aren't what you want them to be, it's like, no, I know I can do this. And then that seesaw just keeps going back and forth.
That's a good point.
And allows you to keep making that progress.
Mm-hmm.
That's great advice. And I think it's a nice reminder, Mike, to all of us that are on journeys of whatever the journey is, to keep putting that one step in front of the other.
Yep.
Because we all wish we could have done more at different times. Yeah. But to do that now with what we're given, I think is the real task.
For sure.
When you fast forward and you look ahead, what do you envision, Mike, as kind of the end game for Greenlight for you and for the whole picture?
For Greenlight, we've talked about franchising. I think that's a strong possibility, but maybe in a different state, city and state. I love South Florida, so maybe. We'll see.
It's beautiful.
But I got partners, so it's not all on me. We got to come together and figure that out. But just expansion. I want to keep growing, bring more awareness to the space, sell more art here because we're primarily known as a tattoo shop. And you know, that's most of our business. We've sold a few pieces, but bring more awareness to art collectors and other galleries and, you know, dealers and just people in that space. I like to do that. That's a huge goal of mine with Greenlight. And then the end goal, you said a couple, it was like a layered question.
Yeah, you're hitting it. I kind of mean like that whole picture.
Okay.
Yeah, like what about for yourself?
So for myself personally, same thing, bringing awareness to my work, my art globally. And making sure that, you know, going back to one of your questions before, which was like, how do you want to be remembered when the art is the only thing that's left? I want to make sure that it lives for as long as the earth lives and, you know, is appreciated and it appreciates long after I'm gone. Not for, you know, my sake, but just like, you know, I think it's cool to see. I went to Paris a couple years ago, and the way people crowd around the Mona Lisa, still, it's 500 years later, you know, people probably wasn't imagining that, you know, that piece would be worth almost $1 billion, you know, $900 million, but not for sale. So that type of stuff is so cool to me. And even though I won't be here to witness it, I think, what else are you doing what you're doing for other than to do it at the highest level?
So true.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Why are you doing anything less, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you want to just see what it looks like if you gave it everything you had? For sure.
So, yeah, just bringing awareness, expansion.
That's one of the coolest parts of actually creating something, and like for you, it's very tangible. I mean, it's so appealing in every way of the word, because it carries on.
Yep.
And we all have things that we create, whether it's literally our offspring to art, to the list goes on, and that's something that's going to, again, in theory, be present after we are.
I keep that in mind.
Yeah,
I do. Like, this is one of my ways of leaving my mark.
You're doing a very nice job at leaving your mark, Mike.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
I think you're on the right track of doing so as well, man.
We're trying, right?
Yeah, no, you're doing it.
One of the ways that we're attempting to do so, Mike, is we have 5 questions that we ask every single guest.
Okay.
My first question for you, we call it the closing litany here at Chats with Clark. My first question has to do with gratitude.
Oh, yeah.
My contention is that those who live with gratitude on their minds and in the forefront of their hearts live a better life than those who do not, bar none. What role, Mike, does gratitude play in your life?
It's huge. Huge. So every night before my daughter goes to bed, like when I got my daughter, we say one thing we're grateful for every night. It's a routine. It's been like this for years. And I'm trying to teach her gratitude, you know. But, you know, that's just an example of how important it is to me. And it plays a huge role, man. You know, it just hits you sometimes. You get that wave of it. It comes out of nowhere. It's like the perfect moment. And you're just like, damn. You just feel it. I don't know. And I think reflecting on the journey helps me capture that feeling a lot more. Cause like, I remember how it used to be and how far I've come. And like, man, but I still got long ways to go. But I'm very, very grateful.
You're so right that when you look back on that journey, it just keeps multiplying. And the way it's all intertwined, you look back and it's like, man, that led me to this and boom, boom, boom.
Yes.
And these people influenced that part of my life, which opened the door for this. And it just keeps going.
Yeah.
It is, man. And you hit the nail on the head too, right? Like your example of basically teaching gratitude or practicing it, maybe a better way to put it, with your daughter. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't show how high of a priority it is, then I don't know what does, right? It's true. In both your lives.
Yeah.
A second question, Mike, has to do with regret.
Okay.
In your life, do you have any regrets? And if so, what have they taught you?
Ooh. I've regretted things in the moment or like shortly after. But I don't carry the regret because you can't change whatever it is that you regret. So you have to accept it at a certain point. So acceptance is huge of the things you can't change. But regret teaches you like, hey, don't do that shit again. Don't do that again. Because you don't want to feel this again. It's a great teacher.
It is a great teacher. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's how you know. It's one of those, I always share this example of like touching the hot stove. You know, we're always taught, oh, don't touch the hot stove. And for a lot of us, I don't know if you're the same. For me, I'm like, touch that thing. Yeah, I got to touch that thing. Uh-huh. And you're like, oh my God, that kills. I'm like, I'm not doing that again. It is. And as much as we want to maybe heed the warning, sometimes we don't. And then that's when that regret kicks in. And it's like, okay, well, we're definitely not going to let that continue.
Yeah.
Third question for you, Mike. I think it's important to have things on your calendar that you're looking forward to because I believe that life's a gift. And I think that doing so just creates an excitement about life.
Absolutely.
What's on your calendar, Mike, that you're looking forward to?
Right now, I got a birthday coming up in about a month, August 22nd.
Happy early birthday.
Thank you. So I haven't been in a very long time, but we're going to Vegas. So it's been like 11 years since I've been to Vegas. But at the exact same time, one of my homies is having his bachelor party out there that weekend. So it was like, yeah, let's do it. So I'm looking forward to that. We also have an anniversary coming up here, our 4-year.
Congrats.
August. Thank you.
August 6th.
So that's the technical anniversary, but the actual celebration will be August 15th.
Nice.
Because MGK weekend is the weekend of the 7th. So we don't want to conflict with that because it gets crazy down here.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
So looking forward to MGK weekend as well. Mm-hmm. The anniversary, my birthday, these are like week after week after week. So August is packed.
Literally.
And then Art Basel every December, I go to Miami for that. Very much looking forward to that. Scene joined us out there one time too, man, and filmed us out there. I've gone every year since 2016, except for COVID. 2020, they didn't have it. And I even went to Hong Kong to go to one as well. So that's every year I look forward to that.
And being surrounded by people that are embarking on it together.
Enthusiastic, like these art enthusiasts. And it's just a lot of inspiration, you know, a lot of culture, a lot of money, a lot of moving parts, man. It's fun.
That's one of the most motivating things is seeing people that you are in your realm doing it really well. It's like, okay, yeah, let's keep going.
Yep.
I'm always blown away by people who have faith in seemingly really trialing situations. I'm like if that person has some steadfast faith, like I can figure it out, right? Like things, that mindset, that approach, I think it applies to so many layers of life.
Mm-hmm.
You got a lot coming up here, Mike. This is great.
Man, it's a good end of the year. It'll be a good fourth quarter.
I always hope that this question inspires people to come up with something in their life, right? Like, it's fascinating to hear about what other people are doing that they're excited about.
Yeah.
And then in turn, it's like, oh man, maybe I should do that, or I should look at this, or I need to get something, even if it's just to light the fire, like I need to get things on my calendar that I'm looking forward to. Then
yeah.
I hope that that's kind of where the question's rooted. And
I like that.
Thank you.
Love that question.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should come to Art Basel.
That sounds great. Yeah, December.
Yeah, first weekend. First week is really like a week.
Okay.
Like Tuesday to Monday almost.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Yeah,
that sounds great.
I'll be there. I might do 3 weeks in Miami in December.
Wow.
That's kind of the plan.
Heck yeah, that sounds great.
Me and my brother, we've been talking about it.
I don't know if Miami's more partying or more working. It's like a fine mix.
It's both.
Yeah, it's a both. Fine mix.
Yeah, nah, that's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like work.
Mm. You gotta have both.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta have both.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth question for you, Mike.
Okay.
When you lay down each night and you're reflecting on the day that you just had, what is it that you hoped to have brought to the world that day?
I hope to be of service. Like, I'm focusing on that more. Like I said before, being an asset. But I hope I helped somebody, at least one person. So, yeah, I just want to be of service. I think, you know, not only the fulfillment you get from it, but I mean, the person on the other end is benefiting as well. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
A two-way street.
Absolutely. Can't lose.
Yeah. And validating the importance of people.
Yep.
It's part of that journey of just kind of constantly learning too. You're learning about more of that person when you see the reaction that comes to be too.
Mm-hmm. And I sometimes, I like to try to help the people that get overlooked, you know, that people walk right past, specifically like, you know, homeless people and stuff like that. So, yeah, just helping people.
That's the people in those shoes have a glaring need, right? There's a glaring lack of something. And that's, if we can make their life better to some capacity, I think that that's a win.
Yep. And usually it's not with money. I might give you something, right, but it's with words. Because I'm like, a lot of the times, I don't know what you're going to do with this money. I might give it to you at the end of the conversation, but I'm going to talk to you first, always.
Truth.
Because this will help you more than this money. This ain't going to change your life. Even if I give you $100, even if I give you $1,000.
Yeah, truth.
It's not going to change your life. But these words might.
It is. It's, again, that personable part. Like, when you feel the love, it's... That's going to carry you further than anything.
Mm-hmm.
I started doing this thing a couple months ago where I would just leave like clothes in my car. Like, instead of just like dropping her off at Goodwill, I'm like, like, I'm going to leave clothes in my car. And then if I see someone that's out there, I'm like, hey, like, do you want like a hoodie? Do you want
like
a shirt or whatever it is?
I like that.
I just keep it going that way.
That's,
and it's cool because then you start the conversation, you're talking to them, and then you're giving them something too. And I know what they're doing with it, at least, too,
right,
which is cool.
Right. No, it's like, I like that line. That's great.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been a very nice, all the way around. It's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing how to interact with people on that scale is great.
I'm going to take that page out your book. Instead of just dropping these bags off, I take them to those bins.
Yeah.
Where you could just put the bag of clothes in them. Instead of doing that, I'm going to, like, actually hand to hand.
It's awesome.
Yeah,
you have to let me know what you think.
Like, I got you. I'll text you.
It's great. Yeah,
I will do that.
Ready for the last one?
I'm ready.
What piece of advice, Mike, would you offer to a specific sector of the audience or the audience abroad?
There's so many things, but one piece of advice is, I don't want to say some cliche stuff, but all the cliches are so true. Okay, I'll go with this. So the shop is called Greenlight, right? A lot of people are curious about the name. This is kind of going to be a long answer-ish. Is that cool?
Roll.
I'll tell you how we came up with it. So there's three of us that own it. Me, my brother Marcus, and D. And we were in a group text trying to come up with a name. And I was like, I wanted to be something that doesn't have to do anything with tattoos or art or whatever, like just an everyday thing. And I got this. This wasn't all me. I stole this model from like Apple and Amazon, you know, the big names like Apple. This has nothing to do with fruit, you know, but everybody knows it. And I saw the Jobs movie too. So the way he came up with the name, and I just thought about all the big, big names. So I'm like, it should be something that everybody's familiar with. And I'm driving as I'm texting, and I go through the green light. And I was like, it could be like green light. I just threw it out there. My brother was like, I like that. And D, you have to know him. His response was kind of funny, but he just did the emoji, like with the shrug. And I'm like, I mean, that's 2.5, because yeah. I like it. Yeah. And I'm like, all right. Green light.
Green light.
That's it. And then I'm like, it could come with a deeper meaning, but that's how we came up with it. But when you see a green light, what do?
We go.
You go. You keep going. You keep going.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a good distinction.
So that was the thing. It was like, it's symbolic of that. Now, that wasn't why we came up with the name, but it was an afterthought. I'm like, oh, yeah, I like it even more now because this is like a motto of mine. One of our artists that used to be here, he's not with us anymore. He, you know, left. But he reminds me of me telling him that all the time, like when he was coming up, to keep going. So I'm going to go with that. Don't quit. Don't give up. Keep going. Eventually it'll work if you do the work. You know, if you really believe in what you're doing, if it's meant for you, you know, if you're good at it for real, just keep going. And that was the first thing that jumped out. Very cliche. It's like, eh.
But the reason I pushed you for it is because we've all heard keep going before, but we've never heard it in the framework of green light.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so cool. It's like we can pinpoint specific moments that the cliche became like rooted and cemented. It wasn't like the first time you heard keep going, you weren't like, okay,
exactly,
I touched my life forever. It was like, okay, I got it.
Yeah.
But when it was in the moment, now you're talking about green light. And the reason I keep looking over here is because there's a big logo of the green light right there is, now it's cemented. Okay. Now it has meaning. And I'm like, I think that's what's so cool about the twist and the Mike Miller spin on it.
Cool. I'm going to add to it, though. It's kind of going back to something we were talking about earlier, you know, being your unique self. Remember that. Like, don't waste your time trying to be like something else, someone else. You know, comparing yourself, over comparing yourself, like that your superpower is your individuality. There's not another person on earth that can do exactly what you can do or that thinks exactly the way that you do. So, you know, dive fully into that. Don't follow, you know. And then naturally you'll lead.
Mm-hmm. And I think the putting the work in and the constant learning is how you enrich the mind and the body and the soul that is authentically us.
That's another one.
Yeah.
Keep learning, keep growing.
Because I think then you're just further developing who you are.
Yes.
Right? Like the way that we think is further enriched by that which we take in and put into our brain,
yeah,
and dive into thinking about, and yeah, then we become more.
Something I thought about, like if something is done growing, then I'm like, what's next? It starts dying, right? If it reaches its full, the next thing is the decline. So Yeah, until that comes, because naturally we all got to go at some point. Yeah, give it all you got.
Mike, you are a deep thinker. I love it. It's great, man. It's opened up for such a fantastic conversation tonight.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. I really appreciate you coming on here, Mike, and sharing all the wisdom and just the stories that are the roots for that wisdom. I think we all, including the audience here, have taken ample nuggets from this that we're going to just keep thinking about. And it's inspired me particularly to keep learning and to keep studying the craft of this and the studying the craft of who I am and trying to fully emerge as someone who can be the best that I can be.
That's great. I
appreciate that, yeah.
No, I gained a lot from this as well, man. And I appreciate you having me.
100%. It's a privilege, yeah. Mike. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen in our audience, thank you so much for tuning in to episode 84 of the Chats with Clark podcast with Mike Miller here, the founder, the artist, the man who is behind Green Light Tattoos and Art Gallery, again, in this beautiful space where we are. All of the links for both Mike and myself will be in the description below or in the pinned comment if you're on YouTube. Mike, one of the points that you made was about bringing awareness to getting art out there and also, frankly, purchasing art for people who are collecting. Where can they find your art?
Online, on Instagram, MikeXArt. I have a website, MikeXArt.com. MikeXArt.
It's perfect, yeah. And again, it will be in the description below or in the pinned comment if you are on YouTube. To our audience that hasn't hit the subscribe button yet, I say this each and every episode. I don't know what you're waiting for. Hit that subscribe button, follow along with us, and keep hearing these top tier conversations with individuals who are out there moving and shaking like Mike Miller. I'm your host, Joe Clark, signing off of episode 84 of the Chats with Clark podcast. We'll see you next time.